This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is a special edition iFanboy podcast on Batman, Return of the Caped Crusaders. Special edition iFanboy podcast on Batman, Return of the Caped Crusaders. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ryan Haupt.
Hello there, true crime believer fighters.
And stepping in today to fill out the animated brain trust is Ron Richards.
Hello, good to be here. Finally.
We are the iFanboy Animated Brain Trust. We like to talk about the DC animated films that come out. This is actually not, Ryan, a DC animated original film. This is a DC Classics animation, I believe it said on the box.
Is that a new distinction now? Substrata?
It seems to be some sort of substrata of their the animation team.
You wanted to say Animation Brain Trust because like the Animation Brain Trust, which is a substrata of iFanboy, this happens in rooms at iFanboy's headquarters that I don't even know about. Right. Connor and Ryan disappear, and I was like, what's going on downstairs?
I gave him the code,
Yeah,
that's why you want a geologist on board. I can find areas of the cave that no one's found before.
So this DC Classic original movie is the first animated anything done. Well, that's not true. It's the first animated film set in the Batman 66 world, as it's now called officially, Batman 66. You know, way back in the old days, and like Super Friends and stuff, Adam West and Burt Ward voiced Batman and Robin for those cartoons. But this is the first cartoon to take place specifically in that world. And the reason why Ron is here is because I know Ron and I have spent lots of time enjoying talking about Batman 66.
Yes, it's fascinating because I feel like the 1966 television series Batman is something that I grew up with. I know you did, Connor. I know a lot of people our age back when it was on syndication. Yep. It was on in the afternoons when we came home from school. I thoroughly enjoyed it, have enjoyed it since then, and then at the same time also hate it because of what it did to the mainstream perception of comics.
Well, that's I wanted to talk about this before we got into the film itself. So, Ryan, you are significantly younger than Ron and I.
So much younger.
What is your A, relationship to Batman 66, and B, thoughts on it in general?
My relationship was mostly a VHS copy of the 1966 movie. Right. Was that when the movie came out?
Yeah, or 67, I think.
It was later. Yeah, it was later than 66. Yeah,
and that was on heavy rotation in my household as a child. It was, you know, I probably watched that, Back to the Future, and Star Wars, and Indiana Jones in about equal measure. So, absolutely adore the Batman 66. My dad grew up watching it when it was on air, so he would also enjoy it with me, and we would, you know, joke about make all the in jokes, right, of, you know, holy hypotenuse and that kind of stuff when I'm doing my math homework. And plus Plus, my dad is named Bruce, and he had a similar hairstyle to Adam West, and he was a surgeon, or is a surgeon, so he was gone a lot. And so young Ryan was suspicious.
What I find fascinating about the phenomenon of the Adam West Burt Ward Batman is that, you know, I know a lot of comic fans, we've seen, you know, the Batman 66 comic come out in recent years, and Mike Allred, you know, mainly doing the art on it, which has been fantastic to look at. I haven't read much of those comics, so I can't say whether they're good or not, but this was news to me until very recently, but the entire Batman 66 is a licensable franchise that's just out in the world.
That's why the Blu-rays came out.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a chicken and the egg between the comic book or the property, but, like, you know, last time I was in Vegas, the casino was filled with Batman 66 slot machines. I know recently in my own personal hobby interest world, they just came out with a Batman 66 pinball machine, which is all the TV show with clips of the TV show and all that sort of stuff. So, like, there's a lot of Batman 66 product out in the world.
Yeah, I think the comic came out in conjunction with the license opening. So the license, you know, for years, fans, you never got any merchandise because the license was all screwed up between the networks and DC and all the different companies. The announcer who was also the executive producer of the show. That company owned part of it. The
Jack, Jack Nance?
Not Jack Nance. It was an H.
Napier. Alfred Napier?
20th Century Fox. Name? 20th Century Fox owned part of the rights. DC owned part of the rights. I think ABC. ABC owned part of the rights.
I'm sorry. Alan Napier played Alfred. He wasn't a producer of the show.
No. William Dozer.
William Dozer, that's it, yes.
So the rights are really convoluted, and then finally they got it all worked out. That's why the market's been flooded with all this merchandise, why the Blu-rays came out, why you've got this animated film, why there's a comic. It's been great for me because I'm a big fan of it. I know, as Ron, you just said, that it could be a touchy subject among comics fans because it did create the image of comic books in most people's minds that hasn't been as strong lately but still kind of there.
You mean the whole Biff Bam Pow comics aren't just for kids anymore?
And exactly. Also the hokey tone and, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say it's fueled hack headlines for years.
Right. So. But for me, I loved it because it was a personification of Silver Age comics. And
Totally. It bled pop. Not only was it a personification of Silver Age comics, but it also of the time of Warhol. Yes. And like pop sensibility of the mid 60s, it's a fantastic time capsule in that regard.
And even some of the episodes were direct adaptations of comic books from the Gold Silver Age. So these were Silver Age comics come to life, and I always loved that about that. So I got no problem with the show. I love it. So let's talk about the cartoon, which is a 78-minute cartoon movie, which I had a lot of fun with, and I thought it did a really good job. There's a couple of things that, you know, a little weird, and we can talk about. Ryan, do you remember way, way, way back when we talked about that Batman anthology movie they put out right around the time that The Dark Knight Returns?
Oh, yeah, I do remember that, yeah.
Talked about how weird it was that they had one of the stories featured a 25-year-old Bruce Wayne.
Because it was done by, like, an anime director in an anime studio, and so he looked like a classic anime character, but it still had Kevin Conroy's voice coming out.
Kevin Conroy's old voice coming out of a 25-year-old anime character. And it took me a while to get around Adam West and Burt Ward and Julie Newmar doing the voices because the characters look the same. But Adam West, Burt Ward, I thought, did a pretty good job of sounding younger. But
Adam West did a better job than Burt Ward.
Oh, I agree with Connor. I think Burt Ward sounded like Burt Ward, but Adam West, you could hear the age in him. And maybe that's because I've seen him, like, and
yeah, Adam West is definitely still more in the public eye than
But what's funny, Connor, is that actually I had less of a problem with Adam West or Burt Ward or Julie Newmar and more of a problem with the lack of Cesar Romero or Burgess Meredith.
Well, they're dead.
Well, no, I know that, but rest their souls.
Come on, the big one was the Frank.
Oh, and I'm sorry. How could I miss my favorite of them all? What's his name? Frank Gorshin. Yes, Frank Gorshin is the Riddler.
Frank Gorshin. Although whoever they got to do the voice, I thought did the best job with Frank Gorshin's Riddler.
I agree. I think the Riddler was the closest to doing a Frank Gorshin impression. Yeah. The Joker, every now and then, they had the laugh down, but that was just about it. And the Penguin just paid no mind or respect to the legacy of Burgess Meredith. I didn't get a wah, wah, wah
there was,
once.
You're right, there was no wah. So William Sailors was the Penguin, Wally Wingert was the Riddler, and Jeff Bergman was the Joker. I thought Jeff Bergman had Cesar Romero's cadence down occasionally. I thought Wally Wingert did a passable Frank Gorshin impression, but it really made me miss him. Frank Gorshin was not the best villain by far on the original TV show. I mean, the Riddler was the best villain. Frank Gorshin was the best person playing a villain. He was, for me, the star of that show, other than the two main characters.
Anytime he was on screen, you couldn't take your eyes off him. He was electric. It was awesome.
Yeah, and it really fueled a strong appreciation for Frank Gorshin's work beyond that. I mean, like he was on Star Trek: The Original Series. Yeah. Like he was one of my favorite actors from the '60s. And I'm glad that at least in this, since he's passed away, in this, the voice actor portraying him picked up the little nuances to his cackle and to the way he
you got to make the laugh distinctive from the Joker's laugh. That's key.
To this day, the only person that Ron and I ever went to talk to at San Diego Comic-Con up in the sad celebrity alleyway was Frank Gorshin.
Not only went up to talk to, but like excitedly went up to talk. And it was the saddest collect. It was like Frank Gorshin hanging out with Chewbacca and Jeremy and Boba Fett. Jeremy Bullock and who plays Chewbacca? My God, I'm losing it.
We love Frank Gorshin, but
Peter Mayhew.
But how did the encounter go? Was he sad or did you enjoy talking to him?
Keep in mind, this was 2001, so you're not going to get a blow by blow of the conversation.
I remember this much. He was not impressed by any means.
That's true.
I remember exactly what he was wearing, and I don't know if it was before lunch. I think it was right before lunch because he was not happy to be there. But still, it's a great memory of mine, and so it's good. But the thing is that like Cesar Romero and Burgess Meredith to me embody a lot of Connor, you're right. I mean, Frank Gorshin was great, but when I think about Batman 60s, I think of Cesar Romero with the white makeup over the mustache, and Burgess Meredith with the wah noise, and just like and it's the collection of all them. And I was disappointed to see they kind of only did it about half as good as they could have.
What's interesting, I thought, was that a lot of the touchstones of the series weren't included, and I would put the wah wah in that kind of thing. So I made a list as I was watching it. Things that were bizarre, like the Batcave layout was reversed.
Yep.
They didn't have the names on the bat poles when they jumped down them. I was all excited to hear atomic batteries to power turbines to speed when they got in the bat.
I missed that. I mean, they kind of did it for the rocket launch, but they didn't do it for the car.
They showed it to you with the car. They showed you pressing the turbines button.
You got to hear them say it.
The design of the front of the police headquarters, which is so iconic, and is still standing on the Warner Brothers lot. You can still go and see it. It was different. Alfred didn't have a Snow White mustache. There was no window cameo when they walked up the side of the building.
Yeah, the window cameo.
What was weirder, Commissioner Gordon had a mustache?
Yes.
Whereas in TV show, he didn't.
Right. So there was a lot of weird things like that were, I don't know if it was a rights thing. I don't know why they decided to change those things. But, I mean, Robin gets in the car, says atomic batteries to power turbines to speed, and they go. And I didn't know why they didn't even include that line of dialogue.
Yeah, Julie and I do that when we get into cars. Like, it's still part of my life.
But I thought it was interesting, like the Batcave being weird. I thought I'm like, oh, maybe we're looking at it from a different angle that we couldn't see from the TV show because it was a two-dimensional set. But then they changed the angle and the layout was all wrong. I'm like, oh, that's weird. But we got to see like the full cave, where we never really saw the full length of the cave, which I thought was kind of neat.
Well, there was definitely cool things they got to do here that you never could have done in the show, like see the full cave. Or
launch a rocket ship.
launch a rocket ship into space and have a battle in space. I mean, that stuff was really cool. I had a really fun time. I just, as a big fan of the show, I was like, well, why didn't they do that? And then, it was fine. But
I thought what was interesting was that Yeah, little things like that were kind of odd. But like also, you know, like with this, I was like, okay, how are they going to play this? Is the tone of the show going to be in the spirit of the 60s show, or is it going to be nudge, nudge, wink, wink, it's 2016 and we know this is all hokey and cheesy? And I couldn't tell what it was doing from moment to moment. Because sometimes
it rode the line between the two.
It rode the line a lot to a distracting point where I was like, all right, commit to one, you know, like, right. Are we going to make sexual innuendo between Batman and Robin, or are we not? Or are we going to, you know, are we going to play up the pop sensibility, or are we going to make fun of it? And it was that kind of, you know, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed revisiting these characters, but I feel as if they couldn't decide. They were trying to do both. They were trying to have their cake and eat it too.
Yeah, I felt like the Aunt Harriet storyline was the farthest out of left field for me, because I mean, yep. She was always such a bit player on the show, which I guess it's nice that they expanded her role, but expanding it in such a weird innuendo-y way.
It also was weird, I thought, just pacing wise, you know, what was the plot of this movie?
Yeah.
And there was like three plots. But what I thought was interesting that they didn't do was, so for the kids who don't know, Batman aired twice a week originally. So it would air, I think it was Tuesdays and Wednesdays. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah.
Same bat time.
So the first episode would be set up the story, introduce the villain, and then the villain commits a crime, Batman and Robin go to stop them, and they get caught in a death trap. And there would be a cliffhanger, and then it would get resolved in the second episode of the week. Yeah. I was really surprised they didn't take that format for the film.
At all.
Because it's almost the same amount of time. So,
yep.
You know, arc it to the midpoint where there's a cliffhanger death trap, which there was with the TV dinner, but that was really early on in the movie, and then resolve it with I thought for sure we'd get that kind of thing too, which we didn't get. Although I really liked the death trap, I liked the fact that the lemon dessert was enough to resolve the ropes on him.
This is the first time I'll advocate having dessert first, Robin.
I expected to get some sort of, you know, a break or something like that, especially seeing the running time was about the length of three episodes of the TV show. But I get why they wouldn't want to do that. But probably about halfway through this, like shortly after the TV dinner death trap scene, right at the beginning of the Batman going evil section. I paused it and I was like, this is weird. Like this got dark and sardonic quickly.
Which I actually give him credit for, because I didn't see it really coming, even though they telegraphed it pretty well. But once he got, it's like, wow, he's being a dick.
Once he fired Alfred, that's why I was like, what's going on?
I really enjoyed Bob Alfred on Skid Row. That might have been my favorite bit.
Yeah, he's collecting garbage.
That was great. Yeah, no, but once he fired Alfred, and then once the shock of that settled, and I was like, oh, the Catwoman thing, he's infected.
Right.
And then, I will admit I laughed when he starts replicating himself and Batman takes over Gotham.
Right.
And what I like is that he's installing Batmans in different seats of power. And the only way you could denote that is by what hat they're wearing.
Right.
when they got to the pastry chef and then,
oh, that was amazing. Gotham deserves a lingerie who appreciates science. It's so good.
I enjoyed the second half more when it got wacky.
Yeah.
I also liked the joke about just how incompetent the GCPD were, that they couldn't handle a shoplifting case without calling Batman in.
Or truancy amongst high school students.
I liked that. And then once they did the jailbreak, in which Robin and Catwoman helped bust out, and I'll talk about that team up in a second, they helped bust out all these criminals. I didn't think I'd get to see like Egghead or Shame or Sandman.
King Tut, my favorite.
Like, I didn't expect to see all those guys. It was awesome. Like, you know, I love all those characters. And Egghead threw eggs at him.
Thanks to that prison breakout scene, they definitely were able to give me as a fan, I got a little taste of everything I wanted from a movie about these characters, right? You know, like, ooh, there's Egghead, there's King Tut, there's the who's the Robin Hood guy?
Oh, it was Art Carney, but I don't know if I remember.
Oh, yeah, Art Carney, man. But
Batman book right here. I'm looking through it.
Yeah, but so they definitely paid attention to giving us you know, everything that we'd want out of this, which, right. you know, fan service or, you know, get, serving your audience. I guess that's fan service, but, you know, I'm fine with it. It was the big fight scene was funny. And
this entire movie is fan service. I mean, yeah. It exists solely for that reason. But the fight scene was great. And then I liked actually the dynamic of Robin and Catwoman having to team up with after Batman goes nuts.
Yep.
Despite the fact that it really exposed that Julianne Moore sounded really, really old.
She got older late as it went on.
Yeah.
Like I didn't notice it till towards the end. I was like, oh yeah, she is older. But my big thing with this is that, you know, so Robin and Catwoman team up to you know, save Gotham from Batman, and then he gets cured, the antidote thing happens, and the dust settles, and all the duplicates fade away. And then they're just like, okay, well, let's go get the real, like, Batman just took over the city. You're going to let him get away with it? Like, I understand he was chemically altered, but there's still repercussions.
Right. For a guy so rigidly law and order, you think he'd put himself in jail.
Right. Yeah. Because it's like, it wasn't just like a fun little neat little thing. He took over the city.
Right. He was the mayor. He was the police commissioner. He was the pastry chef. He was the host of the TV show. Like, I liked it when it got goofier. I liked the space stuff. I really, really liked when Batman took over the police headquarters and he said Begorra.
Yes. Yeah, that was hilarious when the Irish cop, the stereotypical Irish cop,
Chief O'Hara,
who was played by Thomas Lennon from The State.
I didn't think he was great.
I love
Thomas Lennon, but I didn't think his voice was great. But it was fun. It's fun to be in that world. It's fun to see those character designs. They're so iconically 60s. You know, that Catwoman design remains really great. I like the little gag about there being three different Catwomen.
That was
funny.
Very clever. Very clever.
Although they didn't do it with the Riddler, but I had a great time watching this. I mean, ultimately, Ryan, what did you think overall?
I had so much fun with this. Like, I just gave into it from, you know, the first frame and just enjoyed the ride and had a lot of fun. And smiled and laughed and giggled and got excited for the, like you said, the fan service, but was what I went in wanting. So I'm happy.
Ron, overall?
Yeah, overall, it was amusing. It was fun. I 78 minutes was a long time to spend in this world. And I don't know if it going dark and weird in the middle made it better or worse. But, you know, like this was a great, you know, visit to a, you know, to a type of characters that I have a lot of fondness for. And you know, I think they, like I said earlier, they gave you what you wanted in a lot of degree and they, you know, nailed it. But I mean, like once they got into the Bat rocket ship and we're talking about the, you know, Batman asking Robin if he's brave enough to go into space and they're talking about the sacrifice of astronauts, like that's the, and also the, when they didn't jaywalk. Right. Like that was like those are the things that I thought, like just them crossing the street, like waving to the car that stopped to them was great. Like those are the great stuff that I expect from Batman 66, which is a blast. And yeah, and again, like, yeah, of course, Batman has a rocket ship just in case he needs to go to space. I can't say it wasn't a ton of fun. I mean, we can nitpick and we can talk about, you know, things like that. But it was, you know, like I don't think it was perfect, you know, like, you know, for a lot of the reasons that you talked about earlier, Connor, from your list. But it was definitely a blast. It was a fun little escape from my day.
I think we need to talk about a little bit about Adam West and Burt Ward. Adam West, for better or worse, is this version of Batman. His career was pigeonholed almost worse than anybody's. But he does it so well.
So well.
He really understood the irreverent tone where he had to be play the straightest of straight men in order for the show to work. Him and Robin had to be the straightest straight men characters for this madness to work around them. And he's leaned into it, you know. Burt Ward obviously wasn't too happy about it if you read his book about being typecast. But Adam West eventually just like, fuck it, I am this guy, I'll lean into it. And he nails all of those completely dry line readings. I mean, they are dry as a bone. And he's so good at it. He's so good at it.
I mean, yes, it typecast them or pigeonholed him or whatever, but I mean, he does it he did. It was great. It was just great. And like to hear him back in the saddle again was awesome. And yeah, and going back to that astronaut scene and the jaywalking scene and all this other stuff. And even the Wayne Manor scenes, yep, when they're, you know, when he's as Bruce Wayne and his ward, and Alfred, and even, I mean, the aunt, you know, what's her face? Aunt, what's
and
her
Harriet.
Name again?
Harriet.
And Harriet, yeah. I mean, like, yeah, Ryan, you're right. She wasn't a main part of the TV show for a large part of it, but I remember her, and I remember that.
Oh, she was a big part. She was there to make sure they weren't, didn't seem too gay.
Right, yeah.
But that's why they made that, the editor, yeah.
Yeah, but they used that in this movie to make them seem like they're gay. So it's
like... And a quick correction, Ryan was correct. The movie did come out in 66.
Oh, okay, wow, how about that?
After the first season.
Sometimes you can't get rid of a mom.
Still my favorite line of any movie ever.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And when I didn't catch it, but when Julie pointed out to me that that's the entire third act of Dark Knight Rises, it just made my day.
Oh, there was a couple of references to other Batman things in here. There was the one,
oh, there was You Want to Get Nuts. Nuts.
Let's Get Nuts. And then there was another one. I think that was a reference to something from the Nolan films. But there was definitely some sly references to the other Batman properties in this one.
I couldn't. How did you feel about that, Connor? Because like when he said, "You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts." At first, I chuckled, but then I was like, "Oh."
That line I didn't mind because, you know, that's the point where Batman's going dark and crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of a commentary on that, right? So like it's a reference to the dark Batman and when he's being the dark Batman. I didn't mind it. If there had been many more of them, I probably would have minded it more.
That's fan justification at its best. That I respect that. So there you go.
So now we're getting a sequel, apparently.
No, really?
Yeah, they've announced the second one, which is going to star William Shatner as Two-Face.
Really?
Yes. Which, as people may know, Two-Face never made it into the show. The rumor was he was set for the next season, the fourth season. But he never made it into the show. So they've cast Shatner. And I think it's brilliant on two fronts. One, Shatner's great. His voice is great. But two, he would have been great on the show in the 60s. He would have been the kind of guy, if he wasn't playing Captain Kirk in Star Trek at the exact same moment, he would have been the great kind of actor to play a Two-Face originally.
Yeah.
So if they draw him to look like young Shatner and it has Shatner's voice,
yeah,
I think that could be cool. Something really interesting. Now... No word yet, but I'm really going to need a Batgirl in here somewhere.
Yeah, and is Yvonne Craig still alive?
No,
she died
a couple years ago.
Oh, she died? Oh, well. Oh, well, yeah, but they should get Batgirl in there. Because I remember, and maybe I'm alone in this, but do you remember watching the show? Watching the opening credits, and when the Batgirl motorcycle came in, like getting excited because that meant A, it was a later episode, but it was a rarer episode, and it was a whole burst of energy that wasn't there prior. You know,
she died last year. Also, she and Julie Newmar are very important to my sexual growth as a child.
Well, yeah. let's leave that to the imagination.
This show came out the big deal when Ron and I were kids was that I think it was when we were in junior high school. Was that they were bringing this back to syndication for the first time, like in a real way. So they put it on, I think it was like 5 o'clock every day, and they ran the whole series through in order. Every day we all ran home from school. But before that, you just saw random episodes here and there, but this was the first time they were actually doing the whole series.
Yeah.
I remember that being a huge deal at the time. Yeah, I'd like to see Batgirl. I'd hope they don't wait for a third film to introduce her she came in the third season. But, you know, it's fun. I'd like to, maybe now they've gotten a lot of the fan service stuff out of the way, they can just tell a really solid Two-Face story. And maybe they can correct some of these problems. Maybe they can have Burt Ward say atomic batteries to power turbines at speed, and we can all live in a happier world.
I wonder what that conversation was like, because you got to say someone's like, oh, should we do that? Like, no, let's show them pressing the buttons. And we've heard that all before. Like, I wonder what the convincing argument was not to do stuff like that. Yeah, I don't know.
If you're a fan of this show... Not the show, of the TV show Batman.
Or of this show.
I think you'll really like this. I think it's fun. It captures the spirit and allows them to sort of play in the world in a bigger way than they couldn't on TV.
Yeah, no, I agree. This is a blast. And if you like the comic book, if you like these characters, if this is your jam, this is your Batman, then I don't see how you don't watch this.
Ryan, this was more fun for me than the last five or six films we've watched.
Yeah, totally.
Other than the Bruce Tim alternate... reality one. I was like, wow, this is way more fun than that Suicide Squad movie.
Gods and Monsters, is that the one you're talking about?
Gods and Monsters was the only one lately I've really enjoyed. So I had a lot of fun doing this. If they want to put another one out, then I'm all for it.
Yep. I'm just excited. I mean, I liked your point about them making Two-Face look like young Shatner, but I'm curious to see, since we never saw what that character actually looks like, I'm curious to see them design a character from scratch to fit in with this world. I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Like a 60s so. Version of Two-Face.
Yep, yep. So I'm looking forward to that alone in the sequel, as well as all the joy and delight I had watching this.
I'd also like to point out, before we leave, I laughed 3 or 4 times at some of Robin's insults. And, like, he really didn't like Catwoman. And I'm struggling to remember them right now, but I remember laughing out loud 3 or 4 times at his... Yeah. His Catwoman insults.
That was a very odd relationship. And like they had her saying, "I'm going to regret this." Like how many times?
I also laughed really hard when Commissioner Gordon called Batman a paladin of something.
One of those like crazy alliterative phrases they used to string. Yeah. Will the dynamic duo defy death yet again?
Yeah, man.
Holy faster pussycat kill kill was funny.
Yeah, that was funny. What's his name? Napier. No, whoever they got, Dozer. They created a great little pocket universe where this crazy stuff happens. And it was, you know, like to this day, I'll pull up the movie and watch clips from the movie just because it's, I mean, we've always said you can't get rid of a bomb and stuff like that. So it's nice to be able to revisit it with new material.
Cool. All right. So if you want to talk about Batman, the Return of the Caped Crusaders, you can go to fanboy.com. There'll be a post on this show there. You can also find other podcasts, including our weekly Pick a League podcast that Ron and I do with our friend Josh. We talk about the week's comics and our other special edition shows like the Doctor Strange show, and we'll have a Star Wars Rogue One show coming up soon. All those things are found at fanboy.com every week. And so until next time, holy history, Batman.
Stay vigilant out there.
Don't jaywalk.